Saludos. It's one of those, another one of those awkward conference situations in which I'm to present in English to a mostly Puerto Rican Spanish-speaking audience. It's not the first time. But I'm very happy that everyone is here who is here, and I'm especially thankful to my friend Carlos Rodriguez Diaz for inviting me to participate on this panel. And I have to say that I am very, very excited to hear the presentations of the other colleagues on the panel. And so, and of course, I'm honored to be included among all of you real scientists. As an anthropologist, that is always in question. So what I have are just some brief notes on the sort of overall political, economic, and social context of the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Puerto Rico, where I'm from, and where I conducted my doctoral dissertation research on HIV/AIDS activism in Puerto Rico. So back in 2008, candidate Obama wrote a memo to Congress in which he outlined his plan for improving healthcare in Puerto Rico, and in which he said specifically that he would work toward the removal of the healthcare funding cap established by Congress in the late 1960s, and considering that this congressional healthcare cap was obsolete and outmoded. And unfair. So Obama, the candidate, called for the removal of this congressional health care cap, and now in 2015 we find that we are no closer to that goal and very uncertain as to what kinds of political attention and will might be present to address the health care funding cap for Puerto Rico and the kinds of social crises that it produces. And so I'm going to give a little bit of background to that, and then I'll conclude with some thoughts of my own around what is to be done. So as most of you know, Puerto Rico became a colony of the United States in 1898 and was designated as an unincorporated territory through a series of cases heard in Congress known as the Insular Cases. Among other notable aspects of these foundational cases was their designation of Puerto Rico and therefore Puerto Ricans as, quote, foreign in a domestic sense to the United States national body. The Jones Act of 1917 designated all of those born on the island of Puerto Rico to be natural U.S. citizens, and in 1948, Puerto Rico began a constitutional process that culminated in the adoption of the current constitution in 1952. Much has been said about the constitution in recent days with regards to the financial crisis in Puerto Rico that looms large. But most people do not, news sources do not acknowledge the fact that the Puerto Rican Constitution itself is a federal law, which was amended and enacted by Congress, and by the U.S. Congress, and not by the Puerto Rican people. during the mid-20th century period, Puerto Rico underwent the quote-unquote Americanization process stimulated by policies meant to bring Puerto Ricans culturally into line with U.S. standards, including education in English, and various forms of social life, various forms of organizing social life. This Americanization of Puerto Rico, this project of Americanization, resulted from the New Deal policies in the United States. And the congressional cap that was established in the 1960s was a kind of restraint that was placed on those Americanization policies, which were seen as kind of, imperialist welfare, sort of bringing the colony up to speed. And so the congressional cap that was placed in the late 60s was, in a sense, the beginning, one could argue, of the rollback of the welfare state, which we saw intensified and culminating in the late 80s and early 90s. The congressional cap, therefore, established in the late 1960s, represents an attempt to maintain Puerto Rico within this designated foreign and a domestic space, in a foreign relationship to the U.S. national body through the doctrine of unincorporation, which is how the insular cases are known. The precedent set by the insular cases is known as the doctrine of unincorporation. So this has very particular consequences with regards to healthcare in Puerto Rico. And although Puerto Rican workers pay Medicaid and Medicare taxes on their wages in equal measure to U.S. mainland contributors, Funding for these public programs in Puerto Rico is apportioned on the basis of a set dollar amount. That is the cap, which is actually a set dollar amount. This means that unlike the 50 states where funding is allocated on the basis of population, population size and disease burden, Puerto Rican healthcare funding bears no relationship whatsoever to the actual need of the Puerto Rican population. It merely responds to an arbitrary limit placed on federal funding for Puerto Rico. So this restraint on what was thought to be or understood as a benevolent imperialism of the early 20th century United States in Puerto Rico produced Puerto Rico as the showcase of U.S. imperialism in Latin America against the threat of communism in the Caribbean and Latin America, produced a rapid industrialization, which many of us are familiar with, the effects of that, and the process of deindustrialization that we are currently experiencing, and in which the question of healthcare funding is wrapped up with regards to the financial crisis that we are experiencing. So it is crucial to note that the Puerto Rican Constitution that was presented to the U.S. Congress in 1952 included an article that designated health as a civil right. This article, which also included guarantees for the right to work and the right to education, was actually struck from the Constitution by the U.S. Congress. And then ironically, it was on the basis of healthcare as a human right, which Nancy Pelosi and Obama argued their case for Obamacare. And when Obamacare was extended, it was extended to the 50 states and the territories under this logic of healthcare access as a question of human rights. And then, of course, ironically, we saw the move from the Republican side to roll back Obamacare, such that currently Obamacare does not extend to the territories, to the U.S. territories. So although there have been shifts in public health coverage in the United States because of Obamacare in the 50 states, we have not seen those concomitant increase in rates for coverage in the territory, so not just Puerto Rico, but also in Guam, the Mariana Islands, the U.S. Virgin Islands, American Samoa, and various other small islands. So the question that arises then in the context of the upcoming presidential race is, you know, will anyone else address this patently unfair situation in which the United States Congress holds Puerto Rico with regards to public health care? And Bernie Sanders has made some comments with regards to this particular congressional cap. And, of course, Hillary Clinton is well aware of this issue, although, to my knowledge, she has not spoken of it recently. But ultimately, the reality is that it is not something that can be shifted by presidential action. So it's not actually under the presidential purview to make a shift in this policy. This requires congressional action. And so no matter how much the Puerto Rican governor meets with presidential candidates or various high-level administration figures, without congressional action on this healthcare funding cap, Puerto Rican healthcare will remain in a situation of permanent under-resourcing. And not only that, but completely incommensurate funding with regards to its needs. So we can study the needs of our population, but if ultimately resources are not distributed on the basis of that populational need, then our work is almost irrelevant, no? In the sense that ultimately it's at the congressional level that change has to be made. Most commentators on the situation of Puerto Rican healthcare funding do not acknowledge this. There's been recently some press around this question of the need for congressional action. But the other option is, of course, for Puerto Ricans to decide to shift the political landscape entirely. And that is not something that is often acknowledged because we have a hard time thinking beyond the hegemony of the United States political control over Puerto Rico. But it might behoove us to ask some questions about what it would take for Puerto Ricans to mobilize around their health as a question of human rights or as a question of a social imperative beyond what Obama or any other presidential candidate is willing to do and beyond what the U.S. Congress is willing to do. In the U.S. Congress wasn't even willing to extend Obamacare to Puerto Rico. So, you know, why should we think that there would be any congressional action whatsoever on changing this congressional cap? So sadly, the reality is that we are facing a very uncertain future with regards to public health funding in Puerto Rico and very little political will to make any kind of real transformative action happen in terms of the overall situation of healthcare funding in Puerto Rico. Now, that is the general context in which the public health institutions find themselves taxed to their maximum capacity, under-resourced, underfunded, understaffed. On top of that, we have, of course, a massive migration, out-migration that is happening, that is affecting healthcare in Puerto Rico in terms of the presence of healthcare professionals on the island. And the problem continues to be compounded. And when we look at HIV and the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Puerto Rico and the kinds of public health initiatives that are geared towards addressing the AIDS epidemic in Puerto Rico, we have to realize that there has never been a public health campaign aimed at injecting drug users, reducing HIV risk among injecting drug users in Puerto Rico. That has never happened. There has never been a public health campaign aimed directly towards sex workers in Puerto Rico. And the ones that have existed that have addressed questions of gay identity or MSM have been largely stigmatizing and really problematic. And some of us can remember some of those images that equated people with HIV with skulls and other kinds of scary figures, right? So how we shift the public health discourse about HIV/AIDS, how we respond to research initiatives or imperatives in Puerto Rico around HIV/AIDS is always already and how we can then act on the results of our research is entirely conscripted in Puerto Rico by the limits placed on what Puerto Ricans can do through not only the congressional healthcare funding cap, but of course the overall situation of colonialism in Puerto Rico. And so if we want to talk about effective HIV prevention and we want to talk about improving public health in Puerto Rico, we must do so within an acknowledgement of the overall situation of political subjugation. But not only of the acknowledgement of political subjugation, also of our potential to undo that subjugation. And in that sense, the English-speaking Caribbean countries have been demanding reparations from England and other European former colonial masters through public health, right? So there's a 10-point program that CARICOM has put out. And one of those 10 points that reparations could help to address is public health. So if we imagine the question of public health and improving public health as a question of reparations, whether it be reparations for slavery or reparations for colonialism, right, then that might be one of the ways in which we can shift the political landscape around which questions of Puerto Rican healthcare funding are asked, right? So can we demand increased public health funding from the United States as a question of reparation? It's a provocation. It's something that I want to put out there. And I appreciate my time. I think I'll stop here. And if anybody has any questions later, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.